did. It's time for Jim Cates at CJ Online. News, opinion, interviews, and community conversation, live and online. Join Jim and his guests by calling 295-1150 or emailing jim.cates@cjonline.com. And now, from the Topeka Capital Journal and cjonline.com, here's the Dean of Talk Radio in Topeka, Jim Cates.
Good morning, Topeka. Let's start off and talk about my home away from home. In fact, that's where I'm going to be this evening, 29th Wanamaker, Jeremiah Bullfrogs, the best sports bar you'll find anywhere, absolutely anywhere. I don't know how many
Topeka
years we've
Collegiate,
been running this
Topeka's
Topeka
only
contest,
independent school, treats
years,
every child as gifted. Each student is encouraged to excel in a caring, small class learning environment.
All right, we got it. Okay, enough of her. We'll hear more from her later. But every year that we've run the Best of Topeka contest, Jeremiah Bullfrogs is ranked number one, numero uno, the best sports bar to be found anywhere. In fact, Councilman Preisner, I think I've seen you at Jeremiah Bullfrogs on occasion.
Oh, just in passing, Jim.
I'm sure it was. Not on Tuesday nights, of course. No, Busy little rascal on Tuesday nights.
Oh, we tend to be for some reason. I have no idea why.
In fact, last Tuesday, you introduced a resolution that we're now going to create a five-person committee to take a look at our form of government. Now, the action taken Tuesday night by a 9-0 vote was to defer action on this until 2015. What's this all about?
Oh, Jim, back in when we changed our form of government in the mid-80s, the governing body at that point had passed an ordinance in September of 1988 to form a committee of 15 individuals, a cross-section of the community, to just review the form of government. I'm sorry, just review the government. Not necessarily the form of government, just review the government. Well, by ordinance, we were required every 10 years to take a look at our government.
Mm-hmm.
In essence, this year, we were to form a committee and look at our government. The point being is that our government's only 4 years old, so I chose to work with legal and staff and create a new ordinance to replace the old ordinance. It was antiquated for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, it pretty much dictated that the mayor was...
Pull your mic in just a little, Jeff. City Councilman Jeff Preisner is my guest, okay?
How's that, better?
Better.
Okay, and it's like a lot of codes and ordinances that we currently have in place. Staff continues to review those. Most of them are antiquated because we've changed our form of government 4 years ago, and the mayor is no longer the lead administrator of our governing body or of the city of Topeka. So, in essence, that was one of the issues. The ordinance was antiquated, too. We don't need to review our government. We've only been on board, 4 years with it. So what I did was we dated it, date certain, in 2015, which will be 10 years after we instituted the new form of government, city manager form of government. And I shrank the committee from 15 to 5. I just think things get a little convoluted when you've got that many people. And the governing body, i.e. mayor and city council, will be responsible for appointing the five-member committee, ad hoc committee, to review the government. It's not the form of government. It's just reviewing the government.
Okay, what's the difference between the form of government and government? In 2015, we're going to have this five-person committee that's going to review our government rather than our form of government.
Well,
the difference.
I mean, it's a play on words. It's not necessarily to institute some sort of firing squad to blow holes in our form of government, saying that we got to change it again.
Okay, you're not talking about changing the method of electing council members. That's not what this is all about.
Well, it's...
Because I know you... would agree to disagree with the system we have in place now. That's not necessarily what this is all about, then.
No, it's actually just reviewing the government. What can we do better?
Okay.
What can we do better? And if that means changing how we're elected and shrinking the council, that would be one of the issues.
So that could be...
Could be an issue.
Could be an issue.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think it'll be an issue before that, though, Jim.
Yeah. Well, possibly so. City Councilman Jeff Preisner is my guest. You know, when you announced this last week, that there was going to be this five-person committee formed, I was excited about it because I keep going back to last April's election. You know, when we had an issue on the ballot and the voters in Topeka thought they were voting basically to give our mayor veto power and to give the city council the power to override the mayor's veto.
Yes.
Well, that's not what happened. We now have our 10th member of the city council. And this was an issue that was discussed, you know, not only in this newspaper, but on this show, other talk shows, other TV and radio outlets. Everybody was saying the same thing. Vote for this because it's going to clean up the language that we currently have on the books. 2 weeks after that election, the voters of Topeka found out they were voting on something entirely different, because now our mayor is now a permanent member of our city council. He has become the 10th voting member on the majority of issues. I don't think that was the intent. So I guess where I'm going with all of this, Councilman Prisner, I liked your idea of creating this committee just to clean up the language we have on the books, A, so everybody understands what we truly have in the way of government in the city, because I still think there's some confusion. I know there is in the media, and if there is in the media, there certainly has to be out there amongst the populace.
Yeah, don't make me go there. Come on, Jim. Yeah, I was a little, not that I was disappointed, but I didn't start this fight with the issues of downtown and City Hall. I didn't file the lawsuits that created these problems. I just want you to know and understand that. The rules that we were playing by, we'd played by for years. But
I agree.
When
I
attorneys
agree.
Got involved and when the mayor chose to file suit against the city and create, you know, wreak havoc on our city government, this is what we have. I didn't start the fight, but this is what we have. So
I haven't heard anybody in this community that's accusing you of starting the fight. But the point being, do we truly understand what we have in terms of form of government in this community?
Well, I'm
not sure we do.
In essence, I think that we understand the form. The only problem is now we've got state statutes involved in how we identify the mayor, whether or not he is or is not part of the governing body. And when there's a governing body vote, that means the mayor is involved in the vote. Now, on a simple ordinance, the mayor is not ever involved in a vote or a resolution. But you get to a charter ordinance or a zoning issue, you'll find the mayor or expenditures, not expenditures, but ordinances, other than simple ordinances, the mayor is involved. And, yeah, it's one of those issues. You've got to look at the agenda every week and see whether or not the mayor's involved in a vote. Yeah, it's painful. But, again, I didn't create the mess, but I've got to live with it and play within the rules. So I do.
Sure.
And would I like to change it? Sure. But I think, Jim, now's not the time. I think let's just move on, and I can tell you probably in 6 years, I think the players will change quite a bit, and I think things will be different.
Okay.
At least I hope they're different.
Well, I'm glad you're on the show, and one of the reasons, you know, I enjoy having you on the show anyway, but one of the reasons I called last week was when I read, you know, the notice that you were going to attempt to create this five-person commission. I guess I assumed this was going to be on a little faster track than 2015. So one of my questions was going to be, when is this five-person board going to be created?
Well, we're mandated by the ordinance to create the committee by resolution in 2015.
Okay. Nothing's going to be done until 2015. This was simply a mechanism to get something on the books to where everybody now is on notice in 2015. We're going to create this five-person.
I don't want to call this thing superficial, but it is. I mean, it is kind of what it is. And I think when it was created in 1988, it was just something to probably appease somebody. Not that I don't think it's a bad idea. I thought 15 members was way too many. Five is more appropriate. It's kind of like the council and our numbers there at the council. I think nine's too many. I think five or seven would be in order with at-large seats. So, you know, there's a lot of things. You know, I'd like to see, but, you know, some of those are my own personal preference, and you've got to be able to get, you know, other folks on board and believe in what you're trying to do.
Yeah, my question was going to be, since we're talking about a five-person board, we've got 9 city council members and 1 mayor, so now we've got 10 people that are going to appoint 5. 10 elected officials, and we've got to pare this down to 5.
Yeah, well,
but we don't have to worry about this for 6 years.
2015, but again, you know, how much is our politics going to be involved in that, and how much common sense is going to be used at that point to put people together, you know, a professor or two at Washburn, a business community leader, you know, folks like this, a cross-section of the community that have somewhat a little bit of working knowledge about government, to review it. Yeah, I'm just not looking, again, a 15-member firing squad. I mean, you know how convoluted that can be and how ugly that could get. You know,
yep.
I've been through some of those in the last 7 years, and they're not fun.
Jeff Prasner is my guest, city councilman from District Number 8.
Yes, sir.
West Topeka. If you've got a question or a comment, jim.cates@cjonline.com. That's the email address. Coming on at 8:30, we do have the House Speaker, Michael Neal. He's going to be joining me by phone. At 9 o'clock, we have John Arnold and Jim Ogle. They're going to be our media roundtable guests today. And we're going to be talking about, well, I'll leave it up to them, what we're going to be talking about at 9 o'clock. But, Jeff, let's take a look at the smoking ordinance. It passed by a 6-3 vote. Now we have the Libertarian Party. They're getting involved, and apparently the city attorney has said, or the county attorney, I guess, Rich Eckert, was involved in this, saying yes to the petition,
mm-hmm.
the way that it's written. I haven't seen the petition. I don't know what's on it. But if this petition basically says, we're going to give up on the restaurant idea, we're just going to focus on business owner rights for bars and bars only, as far as adult entertainment centers. The city council is going to have two choices if, in fact, 5,700 signatures are gathered. A, you can rescind the actions taken. B, you can amend the actions taken. Or C, I guess there's three options. Or you can put it up to a public vote. Those are your three options, aren't they?
Well, from what I understand...
Is there an option number four?
See, from what I understand, the petition drive has to be accompanied by an ordinance, which would be a ballot question. Okay. Now that ordinance, okay. we'd have 20 days to either adopt it or put it to a vote. So it's not amending our own rules. We'd have to take this ordinance that was driven by petition.
Okay. There's
and validate
no option
it.
B then. There's no amendment.
We got two options: adopt that one, adopt what's brought to us by a verified petition, or set a date within 90 days for a special election and put it to the vote of the people.
Okay. Now, I haven't been in contact other than by email. In fact, I just got a response to an email that I sent attempting to get somebody on the show Monday with the Libertarian Party going through the process. What exactly the voters are going to be voting on, if anything, what they're going to be signing, I guess, would be number one. Has any member of the Libertarian Party been in contact with you or, to the best of your knowledge, any of our other city council members in terms of compromise verbiage, if you will?
No, the
something
only...
Something that, because you are one of the six votes that voted for the smoking ban. Now, if this thing is going to, if the city council is going to rescind their action, if I was heading up this petition drive, I would be making six phone calls before I wrote the petition to see whether there was a possibility, you know, of picking up a vote or two, if in fact 5,700 signatures are gathered.
Well, the two of the no votes were two council members that were attempting to amend the ordinance that evening, which didn't go anywhere. You know, when this was brought to my attention about 18 months ago by Councilwoman Swank, said she was going to run this,
mm-hmm.
she was going to wait, you know, do her homework, which she did. I said, can't we not put it on the ballot? No, can't do that. It's a simple ordinance. So understanding that, you know, it was one of these processes that I wanted to get started. I'd love to see a verified petition come forward. I'd love to see the people vote on it.
Yep.
This is a big enough issue that I felt comfortable putting it into the hands of the voters. But I couldn't ignore the fact that I got 50 emails for proponents to one in opposition. 50 to one. And I probably got 600 emails.
Mm-hmm.
So I simply just could not ignore it. You know, on most issues, you'll get 20, 25 emails. Well, that's, you know, I represent 16,000 people. That's just sometimes won't cut it for me. But when you get those kind of numbers pouring through, I couldn't ignore that.
Yep. And we've had Karen Hiller on the show. We've had Larry Walgast, Bob Archer over the past 3 weeks. And all of them basically have said, in effect, the same thing. That the mail they were getting, the phone calls they were getting, the emails they were getting, you know, 10 to 1, 20 to 1, 30 to 1 in favor of a smoking ban. And I know a couple of the council members possibly that would have voted the other way were very disappointed that the business interest, you know, didn't speak up on this issue saying no to a smoking ban. they ended up voting their constituents' wishes, and you can't blame them.
Yeah, Jim, I got, we put this off 3 weeks before we decided to vote on 3 or 4 weeks, and in that interim, I got, a multitude of phone calls, emails, but it wasn't until the Friday before the Tuesday that I actually heard from the first bar owner.
Isn't that amazing?
And Jim, I know a few guys.
Well, I'm sure you do.
I've got a lot of enemies now, unfortunately, and doesn't mean that I won't stop loving those guys. But hey, we're the last municipality in Kansas, major metropolitan area, that didn't have a smoking ban. The next municipality after Kansas, the largest, is Great Bend at 19,000 people.
Really?
This is true.
Good
now,
night.
I'm in hope that the state legislature will pick this issue up and make a uniform law across the entire state. I mean, you got Garden City, Dodge City, Salina, Manhattan, Lawrence, Sedgwick County, Johnson County, Wyandotte County. We're the last one.
Yeah. Well, I was amazed on this because, again, there's more important issues. If I would have been on the city council, I would have attempted to amend what Councilwoman Swank did, because I think it's probably time that we have a smoking ban in restaurants to where they're child-friendly, and any restaurant's child-friendly. If the majority of revenue derived is from the sale of food, that's a restaurant. It's not a bar. And children, are patrons of restaurants. Kids should never be in a bar. So, that would be the line of separation for me. Ban it everywhere but adult entertainment centers to where alcohol is consumed. Because a bar, a facility that derives 51% of its money from the sale of alcohol, it's not a restaurant. Now you're into a bar, and you're not into a health club, and you're certainly not in a business to where kids should be welcome.
Yeah, there's a number of municipalities in Kansas that have those exceptions, and it's by percentage of food sales to alcohol sales and things like that. But you know as well as I do, there's still people that drag their kids into a bar.
Well, they shouldn't.
They shouldn't.
And the bar owners.
We see that all the time.
Yes, we do. And bar owners, as a matter of policy, should not allow kids to come into a bar. And there's a clear difference between a restaurant that serves alcohol and a bar that serves food.
Yes.
Two entirely different type of establishments.
Man. Not that I know.
Well, from experience, I can say that
yeah.
I do. But I was talking to a couple of bar owners about this because one council person in particular said, I'm just very disappointed that I'm not hearing from the business interest on this issue, and ended up being one of the 6 votes for a smoking ban. Perfectly understandable. But I asked a couple of bar owners, I said, why isn't your association involved in this? I said, what association? There's no bar owners association in Shawnee County, which absolutely amazes me, because I would think there would be so many common areas of interest, it would just make sense that you would have a Topeka area or a Shawnee County area bar association. If for no other reason, to exchange names of the bad boys that come into your establishment that are thrown out where you can pass these names and pictures on down the line to make sure that if one bar bars somebody because of bad behavior, no other bar is going to allow that individual in either.
Yeah, you'd think and foremost, Jim, it'd be about security.
Yeah.
You'd get together and you'd swap stories about how best to secure your business, operation of business, and like you said, pass the bad boy names around.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think so.
Because, you're aware that there's the criminal element that tends to congregate and then move from bar to bar, and when one bar closes, they'll find another place to go. And yeah, there's issues with that.
Bingo. Yeah. But there's no such association
in
Topeka, which really surprises me.
We've got a restaurant association.
We do.
And a lodging association. But
hospitality,
not
yeah.
But no bar association.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we have a bar association, just not the same bar.
They are patrons of the non-existent other bar association.
There you go.
Jeff Reisner is my guest. Jeff, what are some of the other big issues that are going to be coming up over the next 30 days?
I think things are pretty quiet. We do have the capital improvement budget and the capital improvement program that we're working on right now currently. That document's been sitting pretty much idle for about 18 months. It was in front of us this past spring. I made a motion to set it aside because we had to watch to see what this half-cent sales tax did and how it would affect our capital improvement program. Because obviously if we're not borrowing money to fix streets, they don't need to be included into the program because now we have the sales tax dollars to take care of those problems. So now we're developing the capital improvement program and its budget. So that'll be coming up. You know, we'll be addressing, you know, we've got to build a fire station. We need some fire equipment. We're woefully behind in that program in replacing vehicles and maybe a few quality life issues.
Building a fire station. Are you talking about the one at 21st and Western?
No, the one at the one
Harmon's
at 6th
District.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we're looking at that. We need to get that. We need to get that up and running. I don't think that we can. I don't think we can wait on St. Francis Hospital any longer. I think we need to get moving on that.
Okay. Response time, is it that bad in District Number 9?
Well,
if a fire breaks out at 6th and Farallon. Response time getting to 6th and Farallon as opposed to a fire breaking out at 32nd and Farallon.
I've spent 47 years in this community. I grew up at 17th and Bell, and they say Topeka hadn't grown. Well, they're right. You know, I don't want to argue response times, but again, you hope to build fire stations to be able to. To be able to deliver those services if your community does grow.
Do we need it, I guess, would be my question.
Yes, no. I mean, the Wanamaker Corridor has exploded since 1988, and that, for one, has changed in Topeka. But other than that, there's not been a whole lot of residential buildings built.
Jeff, this half hour is flying. Another question, if I could. Let's get into the Jetto situation. In fact, that made the front page today. Jetto just purchased 400 acres or so for around $5 million. Let me make sure I've got the figure correct. My question is, with Jetto, Jeff, you served on the Jetto board before.
I have in the past, but not currently.
Okay. We raise roughly $5 million a year, don't we?
That's probably a little over $6 million.
Okay.
Yeah.
$6
million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we just spent, what, in excess of $5 million, didn't we?
No, I think it's, what, 4.1?
For this land purchase? Okay, I was looking for the figure.
Okay. And then I think we spent some money on some options.
When Jetto was created, was that the intent of Jetto with this $5, $6 million a year that we were raising? Because the purpose of Jetto, of course, was to attract business into this community. Retention of jobs and hopefully the attraction of jobs. Land acquisition, was that part of the deal when you were on the Jetto board?
Well,
did you look at the $6 million as land acquisition money?
See, I was elected in April of 2003, and I think the sales tax issue was on the ballot in 2004. I don't think I sat on the Jetto board until 2005. So, you know, the powers to be felt that this is necessary, and you know, the city council's only had 3 votes on the Jetto board for since its inception. So it's been interesting.
Yeah, and I'm asking a question. I really don't have an opinion on this. I guess I'm looking for information. It would appear from the outside looking in that we would maybe we're proactive on this. Maybe that's a good thing. But to me, if we don't have any tenant out there, any prospective tenant that's looking at this 400-acre parcel,
right?
Why spend the money now? Why not wait until we've got a prospective tenant and then go out and
you'd assume
take
that
the money? I don't know.
You could assume that you could roll over your options, but I'm in hopes with that first parcel of land that they had purchased, which is directly across 75 Highway from Heartland Park, that somehow in the near future, we can get something to work to develop that property that would enhance somehow the park across the street. I saw some value in that purchase only because I thought if they could help each other somehow. Yeah, we're in the land business, and apparently across the United States, in order to be progressive and identify businesses and bring them to your community, you've got to have land. And I understand that. Yeah, it's a cart before the horse or horse before the cart. You've got to do something. Doing nothing is not an option.
Jim.Cates@CJOnline.com. That's our email address. This one came in. It says, Jeff, my friend, please, we need that fire equipment. And yes, number 5 firehouse does need to be repaired. Number 5 firehouse, I believe, is the one at 21st.
21st Western. We've,
yeah. In fact,
we've already approved it.
That just sent this email, Ty. I'm
sure. Oh, no, Ty, we'd already, I believe we'd already approved the, I think it's $1.8 million for that project budget.
Okay, that's the 21st and
Western. Yeah, okay. To repair the station. So 13 is, I believe, I think it's number 13 would be the number of the new fire station out in Northwest Topeka. I feel pretty confident that working with Mr. Harmon, we can get that in the CIP and hopefully move forward on that.
Okay. Is there going to be a study survey done to see whether there is that true need or whether we're adequately covering that area now?
Well,
and I understand the politics of it. Harmon's the only one without a fire station. I understand all of that. But are we really going to take a look to see whether there is a true need as far as response time?
Hey,
because we've got 21st and Western, that's a fire station that is in a serious state of disrepair. You know, we've got other needs that need to be met.
Hey,
only so many dollars to go around.
But for the record, I don't have a community center in my district.
Okay? Oh, Lord.
Tit for tat there.
Here we go.
No, but in the firefighters, we'd had commissioned a study. Gosh, it's been, what do I want to say, 4 years ago now, possibly? You know, they talked about closing engine company number 3, taking engine company number 3, move it out to the new fire station out in Northwest Topeka. So that study's been done and completed, and this is where this has evolved from. This wasn't just because Mr. Harmon didn't have a fire station in his district. It was because the study had recommended that we build one out there in anticipation, hopefully, of growth. Now, we've had that growth since 1980 for the last 20 years because of the Wanamaker Corridor. But again, at the end of the day, that is more of a first responder issue out there because obviously with the building codes and new buildings, we don't have the fire, you know, the risk of fire that we probably would have in Central Topeka or East Topeka or, you know, some of the older structures here in our community.
Jeff, we're out of time. I appreciate you coming.
Man, that was fast.
Well, that was.
Senator, I always enjoy coming down.
Next time we'll do it for an hour.
All right, sir.
City Councilman Jeff Prisner. And if I can get this big mama up and running, House Speaker Mike O'Neill is going to be joining us by phone in a few minutes. Stay tuned. You're listening to Jim Cates at CJ Online.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org. It's the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies.
Okay, welcome back, folks. Jim.Cates at cgonline.com. If you've got a question or a comment, hey, we just had another email from Ty, and it says, Jim, there were two studies done, one by the Union Free and one by the city, and both said that response time was a problem in District Number 9. So that's an answer to that question, and we appreciate City Councilman Jeff Prosser coming on, joining me by phone, somebody that... Just to show you how old this guy is, I served with him in the legislature. He's been around the block, believe you me. Good morning, House Speaker Mike O'Neill.
Good morning, Jim.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Well, considering my advanced age, as you pointed out.
Mike, how many years have you been serving in the legislature?
I just completed my 25th session. Came in the session of 85.
1985.
Yeah, I started when I was 12 years old.
Pretty close to it. Mike, you're one of what, three legislators from Reno County now? Has Reno grown to three legislative representatives?
Actually, we have several reps that have portions of Reno County, three predominantly, but Joe Seiwert, who's a new rep from down the Pretty Prairie area, Jan Pauls and I share Hutchinson. Then Bob Bethel comes in with several townships on the west side of the county, and Mitch Holmes actually has one township. So we've got several who at least touch Reno County now.
Okay, and Mike, last year you were elected speaker, and well, I'll tell you, you came in at a rather difficult time, to say the least.
Well, it was, and that's one of the reasons why I was interested in running. Is we needed some experience, I thought, at the helm, and I've been through a similar situation we had back in 2002, 2003, another recession, not the magnitude of this one, but we've been here before, and I was looking forward to the challenge.
Mike O'Neill is my guest, House Speaker Mike. Taking a look at next year, you know, you've got, we're obviously into, if not a budget crisis situation, certainly it's going to be a challenging year budget-wise.
No question about that. We're going to have another year where we're probably going to have to go in and make cuts, even in the current year's approved budget, before we start mapping out the 2011 fiscal year budget. We could be easily $500 million down in terms of getting us to a balanced budget, so it'll be extremely challenging. Other states are facing the same challenge. Many of them are in a much worse shape than we are, but I'm more interested in just the boundaries of our state and how we address the challenges that we face here in Kansas.
Mike, how are we going to bring this puppy into balance next year?
The fundamental problem, Jim, is that we are state government is spending more money than it's taking in. And there's two ways to view that. Those who are interested in expanding government say the simple solution is we've got to support government in the means that it's become accustomed, and so you just raise taxes to support the spending. I am not in that camp. When government overspends, we need to rein in that spending. And that means cuts in state expenditures, and we look for ways to save money. It may be that programs that have expanded enough that it's now competing with the private sector, those need to be scaled back. Some states take the yellow book pages or the yellow pages approach to government. If they look in the yellow pages, and there is a service provided in the yellow pages, that's probably a service that government should not be involved in because it's being handled adequately in the private sector. So we're looking very hard at the budgets, and we've just introduced legislation through the Appropriations Committee this summer for performance-based budgeting. My preference would be to go to a zero-based budgeting model where we actually break the budgets down to zero and then build them up from scratch. Extremely difficult to do with the size budgets that we're talking about and extremely time-consuming. So I think realistically we need to look at something along the lines of performance-based budgeting and find where we're getting the best bang for the buck and return on investment with the tax dollars that we're spending and go from there.
Speaking of return on investment, House Speaker Mike O'Neill, one of the challenges you're going to have in 2010 is going to be to shore up CAPERS, correct?
Yes,
because over the short run, you know, there's still money to pay current retirees' benefits.
Right, but, there is. Believe it or not, I'm a little like the governor on this. I would not characterize the system as being bankrupt. But if you look out actuarially into the future years, if we do not make adjustments, it will indeed become bankrupt. Now, there's not an immediate need to suddenly rush to start expanding what we're paying into the system, because we're in a recession right now, and the ability for us to do that is not there. But we need to develop a plan for getting us into balance once we emerge out of this recession. And one of those things, obviously, we need to protect current CAPERS employees. We're not going to be changing their benefits. It's a defined benefit program, and we don't want to tamper with that. But moving forward, I am convinced that government is going to have to operate a little bit more like the private sector, and obviously the private sector has moved very strongly into a defined contribution system, and I think we need to look strongly at that.
You're talking about a 401k, and Speaker Mike O'Neill, let's make it perfectly clear that what the Republicans are proposing, current state employees would be grandfathered in on their defined benefit program.
That's correct. Yeah, we're not going to impair any current contractual relationships we have with current CAPERS participants.
Okay, because politically, that would be political suicide once again for the right-of-center conservative Republicans, of which I certainly consider myself to be one.
Well, and it's not only a political issue; it's a legal issue. It's a contract between employer and employee.
Yeah. So what we're talking about, new hires would no longer be covered under a defined benefit pension program. They would be covered under a 401k. And I think there's two legislators that are going to be running this bill next year. It's going to be a bill that's going to be introduced, I believe, on the House side, correct?
I believe it is, and it's certainly worthy of consideration, debate, and hopefully we can move forward with that plan.
Well, again, it makes so much sense. You know, we're seeing this in the private sector. You know, defined benefit programs, they're pretty much gone, you know, in the private sector. The only place you're finding defined benefit pension programs now, which are very, very expensive, as we're finding out, is in the government sector. The private sector, they've done away with the defined benefit programs in favor of a 401k.
Exactly. Program.
But politically, this is going to be a tough sell.
It is.
Because once again, the conservatives are going to be perceived as the bad guy, you know, taking all of these benefits away from government employees. Well, we're not taking anything away from any existing government employee.
That's right.
Well, you've got a tough sell ahead of you. Have you talked to Senate leadership? Are they behind you on this one?
We have not talked substantively about it. There is Senate buy-in. Senator Rattle, who's the president pro tem, is interested, and the people I have working on the House side are working directly with Senator Rattle, and I'm sure there will be others. But in terms of having a substantive sit down with Senate leadership, we have not at this point. The substantive sit downs we've had have been more focused on just the overall budget picture, which is the most immediate problem we face.
Well, you certainly have your problems in terms of Senate leadership, you know, looking at our budget, because the Senate, unfortunately, has certainly been to the left of the House over the past few years, you know, on budgetary considerations especially.
Well, we're hoping that we all learn from mistakes that were made in the last session. I think everybody, even on the Senate side, would now concede that the Senate bill, budget bill that came over that was concurred in with a scant majority on the House side, a handful of Republican moderates and all the Democrats, was in retrospect a big mistake. And it left some gaping holes in the budget that were unintended, that would have been, the problems would have been caught if we had taken the traditional route of putting the budget into a conference committee to get those things worked out. I've asked legislative staff if they can remember a time in recent history, and by recent history I'm talking the last 30, 40 years, where the state budget has not been the product of a final conference committee compromise. And the longest serving people in legislative research could not remember a time that we have not had a budget that was a product of compromise. Last year was the first time they can remember. And it was certainly the first time in my 25 years of experience that the system was circumvented. And we now are kind of seeing what problems are visited when we do that.
House Speaker Mike O'Neill has joined me by phone. Jim.Gates@cjonline.com. If you have a question or a comment for Speaker O'Neill, Mike, we need to take a break. And when we return, let's talk about some of the other major issues that you're going to be faced with come 2010. It's all coming up. Stay tuned, folks.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Savings for everybody. We're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Welcome back. The Golden Corral, a longtime sponsor of the Jim Cates Show, 16th and Wanamaker, folks. Again, if you like good food and lots of it, What a great place to go graze, huh? Not bad at all, because you can go out any evening for less than $10, all you can eat. And let me tell you, there is a lot of food to be eaten, including sirloin steak for less than $10, folks. The Golden Corral, and they also have a breakfast buffet on weekends as well. Saturdays and Sundays, the Golden Corral, 16th and Wanamaker, a great place to go for a buffet breakfast. Check it out. Coming in at 9 o'clock, Jim Ogle, the manager of WIBW TV 13, and John Arnold. They're going to be joining me for our media roundtable when we discuss the top stories of the week. But for the next 10 minutes, somebody that I served with many, many years ago, great guy, delighted that he's Speaker of the House, Mike O'Neill. Mike, we were visiting on break, and I asked what the top three issues were going to be in 2010 for you as Speaker. And you said, number one, the budget. Number two, the budget. And number three, the budget.
That's correct.
We're going to spend a little time next year talking about money.
Yeah.
Tax collections. You know, they've been all over the board this year. You know, 1 month we're getting a fairly decent report. The next month, tax collections are back down.
Yes.
I mean, really, just there doesn't seem to be any consistency as far as a definitive trend, either up, down. We're kind of bouncing out there. Which makes your job a little more difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you need to keep in mind that 1 month is not the same as another. There are certain months that are more important in terms of making projections than others. August, for example, is not a bellwether month where you would look at that and then try to project what the next 11 months might look like. Unfortunately, September is one of those months. For instance, there are a lot of, you know, quarterly taxes are due, and it's just a much bigger month receipt-wise and expenditure-wise for the state, and it's probably a better gauge of what's going on than August. Well, you saw that September numbers were down considerably, so that really got our attention. It's not, as the governor indicated, it's not to the point where we feel like we need to make immediate adjustments. And of course, if adjustments are made, the governor would have to make them, because we don't have to go, but we don't go back into session until January. But if this September trend continues, the governor will probably have to come in with another round of allotments, which are essentially targeted cuts in the current fiscal year budget. And we may well, and I predict that we'll have to come in January and probably run another rescission bill like we did in 2009. So there are months, and then there are months. So in terms of things jumping around, frankly, what has been consistently down, personal income tax and corporate income tax, those have been troublesome for us. Sales tax, interestingly, has kind of held its own. But when you think about the level of unemployment in the state and the fact that people are still spending money, but they may be spending some of that money out of unemployment benefits, that's not necessarily a good sign. I like to see the sales taxes stay fairly constant. So that is a indicator of how bad the recession is or whether we're starting to pull out of it. But what we're getting hit hard on particularly is the corporate income tax, and it's been consistently down.
Speaker O'Neill, because we do have an activist Supreme Court in the state, how much flexibility do you have now on school finance? You know, if things really are in the toilet, you know, come January the 10th, when you come back to town, you know, we've got to cut somewhere. And because of our Supreme Court ruling a few years ago, how much freedom, how much wiggle room do you have concerning public school finance?
Well, in fact, it may be less a function of what the court may eventually do with a new case than it is with the Stimulus Act, which places limitations on cuts that could be made in the area of K-12 or higher education without losing benefits, the stimulus money that's come in that we've used to backfill some state general fund dollars. And we're getting close to the limit on what we can do there, unless the state would get a waiver so that K-12 and higher education could be decoupled, and you could look at those separately. Under the stimulus package, you have to look at K-12 and Regents the same way and make corresponding cuts, and that's what we had to do during the 2009 session. Fast forwarding ahead to this presumed new challenge on education, it is sort of a new landscape. In 2005, when we were forced to spend more money on schools, we also were able to put some school finance reforms into place. So a future lawsuit would look different than the last lawsuit. The Montoy case was dismissed by the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did not retain jurisdiction to revisit that case in the future. And so we would anticipate that any new suit would literally be a new suit, new facts, new landscape. Three-judge panel would be appointed to look at it. There would be fact-finding. We would be able to introduce evidence of trends and whether throwing more money at the problem is really getting us the outcomes that the court told us in 2005 that they wanted. We understand it's about outcomes, so let's look and see whether the money that we've spent has truly made a difference in outcomes. Some of the preliminary studies that we've seen is that there are schools out there of highly efficient, what we call highly efficient schools, that are doing more with less and getting good outcomes, and it's not about there's not a direct correlation between a dollar spent and a dollar's worth of educational outcome performance.
Bingo. You know, our results, all of the testing results in Kansas prior to the Supreme Court stepping in, you know, we were in the top 25 percentile to start with.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't in bad shape in this state. I still don't understand the Supreme Court jumping into the middle of this. But Speaker O'Neill, worst-case scenario, revenues are down. Now you've got 125 House members that are coming back the second week of January 2010. Where do you cut? Worst case scenario. Where do we go? What's first? I know Dick Miller was on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about, you know, a comprehensive transportation package that's going to be introduced in 2010. Well,
yeah,
and with all due respect to Dib, I don't know where the money's coming from to look at a comprehensive transportation package, but at least, you know, it'll start a point of discussion, I suppose.
Well certainly, and make no mistake, I support a comprehensive, another comprehensive highway transportation plan. I do not support, however, increased taxes to support a new program because we just can't afford it at this point. But I do think that we need to identify projects and put together a framework for the next highway plan such that when our revenues start turning around, and they will, that we will be able to use the traditional sources of funding to improve our highways, maintain our highways, and that sort of thing. But we're not going to be in enhancement mode in the session of 2010 because we have such a budget deficit that we're looking at. And the transportation people, if they're thinking that they're going to be able to raise a tax and then have it stay and dedicated as a highway plan, I think are maybe being a little naive, because chances are any tax increase that gets passed, and I don't think there will be one, but any tax increase that's passed is probably going to go to the bottom line, not to build something new or do something new that we haven't done in the last year.
Yeah, Deb Miller, when she was on the show, I think had a pretty good sense of reality of what was going to happen in 2010. You know, this was simply going to be the year that a plan would be introduced, and not much hope of passage. But where do we go? You know, prisons. I know, Mike, when I was in the legislature, when you and I served together, this was certainly discussed. Unfortunately, we passed sentencing guidelines in 1992, which still troubles me because of the home burglar situation, to where an unarmed home burglar, it's just virtually impossible for this individual to ever serve time behind bars. But having said that, privatization of prisons, Mike, I don't understand why we've never wrapped our arms around this legislatively, because to me this would be a way to put more bad guys behind bars at very little, if any, cost to the state, wouldn't it? When you've got the Yates Centers of the world saying, hey, we'll build the prison, build it, and I know they will come.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. In fact, I worked on a House bill that would actually have accomplished that. I don't think that is really a long-term solution, but it is the whole concept of privatization of some services. In other words, if the private sector can do certain things better than the government sector, we need to let them do that. And prisons and jails and that sort of thing, I know a lot of communities are looking at that. We've struggled to find a combination of proposals that get the administration's approval. Of course, the Department of Corrections doesn't want to turn loose of too much authority, so it's something that we'll continue to explore. The reductions come from studying these budgets and understanding where there has been what I call mission creep within the agencies. The agencies are doing more and more today because they've had the dollars to do them with, and we need to go back to what the core mission of that agency was. What are the essential services that our taxpayers need and we expect government to provide, and let's prioritize those and make sure those services are being provided. When we're expanding government services into other areas, that's where we need to look to rein those in. That's not to say that eventually when revenues turn around we can't go back and have government doing a little bit more, but that the fundamental problem we have with our budget right now is government overspending.
Mike, unfortunately, we are out of time, my friend. Love to do this again. Let's try to do it sometime in early January before you officially come back.
That may be a possibility. We're going to be pretty busy, but I'll try to make myself available to you, Jim.
Okay, Mike, anytime you're in Topeka, and I know you're in Hutchinson today as we speak, but anytime you're in Topeka, we'd love to have you in studio to spend an hour with us.
Very good.
Appreciate you coming on. We're glad you're speaker, believe you me.
Thank you, Jim.
Mike O'Neill, House Speaker. He is a good one, folks. We'll try to get Mike on for more time next time. Boy, I'll tell you, we're really rolling through them this morning. Well, we're going to slow down a little on the flip side of the 9 o'clock news because we are going to spend a full hour with John Arnold and Jim Ogle. Jim is walking through the door as we speak, and we'll be back. Stay tuned. More to come. I'm Jim Cates.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience the local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim. By Brickhouse Antiques, 37th and Burlingame. Okay, for the next hour, we have, well, two regulars with us. Welcome back, John Arnold. Always good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
And Jim Ogle.
Good morning,
fresh
everyone.
From the doctor's office. Well, you're looking pretty healthy.
Fresh from Joe Mumford looking over his surgical work on my reattached elbow and the pins that I still have in my hand after I took a closer examination of Topeka's street quality on September 12th. You very much got right down face first to look at the quality of the concrete. And,
you're pretty dedicated in this complete streets.
I am totally
program.
Dedicated
I
to the complete streets
you.
Thing. And so consequently, in crashing... one of the things I learned, one of the extraordinary things, from the moment I wiped out, and I apparently had a fairly spectacular wipeout, I counted 11 different people who stopped their cars and who gathered around me, were bracing, holding my head for me, talking to me, comparing, if you called 911, I called 911, right? And now this, blocking traffic. Because I hit head first, real concern about me lapsing out and everything, and talking to me, how people did that, good neighbors, good Samaritans. I have no idea who any of them are. Though, you know, one of the things they ask, the easy things to ask someone to keep them alert in a situation like that is, what's your name? What's your name? So people kept asking, what's your name? How old are you? Do you know what today is?
Yeah.
What's your name? And about the sixth time
today's the day I broke my head.
Yeah. About the sixth time, I go, my name's Jim Ogle. And this woman goes, you're from Channel 13, aren't you? And, you know, I had wiped my glasses off. It was just blur of heads above me and everything. I said, well, I wish I were meeting you under better circumstances. But from that moment, from those people, from the ambulance that had to headboard me and everything and take me to this new Stormont emergency room, I had taken a tour just a week before, but then I got a really exclusive inside look. All those people and how they handled me for the next about 8.5, 9 hours I was in there, even to all of Dr. Mumford and his staff at Kansas Orthopedic Sports Medicine. And then it just so happens that the guy who's doing my hand therapy, Jeff, is over at the new St. Francis facility on Fairlawn. We're blessed in this community. I've been hurt in other communities. And the worst things people are writing about, as they say, about Obamacare and all that, that how does you'll wait for ages in emergency rooms and to get an appointment and service and you'll just be a number and everything. I'm absolutely amazed at the quality of care we have here. It is so opposite of that. I'm not making a political statement either way on that whole issue of health care reform. I just, you know, I had a unique insight provided by having something bad happen to really the quality of the people who are doing all this stuff that I've interacted with.
Yeah. Well, this is truly a legitimate regional medical center in Topeka.
Absolutely. Yeah, but the thing that is important to remember, it's why I love this city. Our faults in no way equal the extraordinary people that are in this community who have that sense of compassion about reaching out to others and helping. You see that in the level of gifts that this community gives to an organization like, say, the United Way. You see it when there's a public appeal made to help this family who's had a disaster, that Topekans, Shawnee Countyans, people from Northeast Kansas, they still have that attitude that if my neighbor's barn burned down, I've got to rush over with food and we've got to start helping them build a new one. And I just think that makes this an extraordinarily good place to live.
Well, I certainly have had my opportunities to leave Topeka. I chose not to. This is going to be my permanent home. 9 months out of the year. I'm not excited about being in Topeka in January, February, or March.
Well, with our recent temperatures, Jim, we're already pushing you right up against that, and we're still in October, aren't we?
Yeah, I'll amend that statement. This is going to be my permanent home 8 months
out of the year. There you go.
John Arnold and Jim Ogle are my guests. By the way, I want to give a plug to a show that's going to be on WIBW TV 13 a week from Saturday, and that's 48 hours. And this is going to be a story about Karen Harkness and Mike Sisko.
Yeah.
And Chad Harkness, well, Karen was a good friend, and Chad, the son, is a very close friend of mine. Chad's going to be with us, by the way, on the air a week from tomorrow. We're going to have the producer of 48 hours, Sarah Ely, is going to be joining us by phone. And Chad's going to be in studio. We're going to be talking about the 48-hour show that's going to be aired on WIBW TV 13 a week from Saturday at 9 o'clock. And I know many of you in this community remember Mike Sisko, certainly remember Karen Harkness. So you might want to make note of that time and date. So,
and particularly here, Jim, it's so important for people to watch and reacquaint themselves. You know, 48 Hours does these because it's a look back and to hope to generate someone who somehow knows something but missed telling it, didn't either want to at the time or not, but can spur them. So watching tonight, hearing something, they will have the Crime Stoppers line set up. They're staffing a phone bank for it. We'll be doing some live shots around it before and after. We're also donating 30 seconds of commercial time to Crime Stoppers to make an appeal because we figure more Northeast Kansans are going to be watching on this night because of the content. And also to the effort for Safest Capital Cities, we're making a donation at a time, and they'll be doing a message as well that evening.
Okay. Terry Simons, I might want to contact Terry Simons as well to get Terry, him on.
Terry has Terry retired, and Doug Searcy is the new Crime Stoppers coordinator.
Who? Doug
Searcy, Lieutenant Doug Searcy.
Oh, okay.
Is the new Crime Stoppers coordinator, and the only reason I can speak with assurance about that is because I'm this year's chair of the board for Crime Stoppers.
Oh, I'm sure you are. Lord, you're involved in everything in this community.
A few things.
I'm not surprised.
A few things.
If you want to have somebody, of course, from WIBW TV 13 come in a week from Friday as well.
Well, one of the interesting things is a sidelight about this. You've got the woman who's the producer coming in, but one of the other producers who apparently participated in this, John James, told me, and I only know it because John told me, was the accused Letterman blackmailer. Was one of the other people working on this
the
project.
The man or the woman?
The man.
Halderman or?
Halderman.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. He worked as a producer for 48 hours.
Interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And these things get produced fairly significantly in advance. I mean, this thing's been in the works for a year.
Yeah, a little over a year, as a
matter
of fact.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, yeah. This thing's been delayed, postponed, because they keep coming up with another hook, another angle on this. And it's going to be quite a show indeed. But again, the purpose of this, hopefully, you know, we can bring closure to the Sisko and Harkness family on this, and maybe we can come up with
absolutely
just that last tip where it will lead to an arrest and a conviction. So,
you know,
was that 6 or 8 years ago, Jim?
Six. 2000.
It was one. Quite a while back. Yeah.
It's a
July
way.
Of,
but one of the things they found in these, there's a great track record of a period of time passing, a show like this does an in-depth thing. 48 Hours has again and again dug up other people who then are compelled to talk, and it brought breaks to cases. And that's why it's going to be really exciting to see if we can get some jog someone who tipped them over to the they've known something but they haven't said anything. They could start a chain in motion of solving this and bringing closure to these families.
You betcha. You betcha. So that's coming up a week from Saturday. Let's talk about the top stories of the week. And Jim Ogle, let's go to you first.
Well,
your top story of the week would be?
Let's see. You know, the I give the CJ all the credit for its excellent series, looking at abuses in the prisons and out here at the correctional facility, and the governor's call to do a top to bottom. You know, we're one of the few states in this country that doesn't have an auditor's function front and center. And, you know, you recently had Bob Archer on, mm-hmm. and he talked about the lack of any audit function being available at the city level. Mm-hmm. Certainly the county would benefit, given what we've learned in some cases about how money is going through. You know, you cannot expect a commissioner or a city council member to function effectively as a forensic auditor. You just can't. Mm-hmm. And by the same token, the effectiveness of programs, you need people who can do that well. I think that we need people constantly looking at this stuff. We would waste less money. If we save the money that the school board and it's still being adjudicated, but a good portion of the money that went to Bob Heck, and we saved some of the money of digging holes and undigging holes, and we'd have no question. We could hire the best audit staff in the world here. And I think that what it really speaks to is that there ought to be a public auditor's function to issue independent reports about how things are working and regularly look at things.
Who would the auditor serve the pleasure of? Let's take the city level, and then we'll go to the county level. If you're going to hire a city auditor or a county auditor, who do they report to? Now, John, you've been in the business for many, many years.
Yeah.
What works the best?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to distinguish is between an auditor and a performance auditor. I think what Jim's talking about is a performance auditor.
Jim actually wants both, but that's cool.
Well, we have the other auditors. The financial auditor is ongoing, and in both the city and the county. I don't know if the state has an auditor. I suspect that that's done in the budget office, but I'm not sure exactly how they do it at the state level.
We stopped electing a state auditor back in the 60s, I believe.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, performance auditing is a really useful function, and what we've done here is on occasion hired some consulting firm to come in and take a look, like Management Partners was hired by the city 4 or 5 years ago. And they made some suggestions. I'm not sure what the role of Dennis Taylor is in the city anymore. He was to be in there doing something in terms of performance and efficiencies. Maybe he's functioning as a performance auditor, but he would be closest to anything like that. The regular auditors that we hire, the financial firms, they don't do a forensic auditor auditing function at all, unless they're specially chartered to do it for a particular function, you like the Heck thing or the
right.
school board check deal, all of those, some special thing. But performance auditing is something that locally here, I suppose, the closest thing was Mark Funkhauser's role in Kansas City, Missouri. He was called the city auditor, but he was very big into performance auditing and had some renown around the country for doing performance auditing. Of course, that doesn't mean that you necessarily make a good mayor, as we've seen.
Right.
But
or your wife makes a good chief of staff.
Yeah. There are some judgment problems there, but nevertheless, performance auditing, I think, is useful, and we could benefit from having that.
Okay, so on the county level, serving at the pleasure of our three county commissioners.
It would have to be at the county commissioners.
What about on the city level? Should This performance auditor serveth the pleasure of our city manager or of our elected body.
Generally speaking, it should be the city manager because the council is supposed to hold him responsible for making sure everything works in the city. Now, they haven't quite done it, that, and that's one of the things I want to talk about when we get a chance, because they haven't supported this form of government particularly well. And dividing up so that the council still has some staff, the mayor still has some staff. They're not requiring the manager to be responsible for everything. And that's the only way you get that kind of thing to work well. I mean, Jim doesn't run his TV station by having six different people manage things, or nine.
Well, there are a few television groups that have operated like that, and thank God I'm not in working
that's
for one
right,
of them.
That's right.
And you're absolutely right. But, John, one of the things that I think is worth a discussion and debate is that if the council truly fulfills its role of stepping back and not trying to run day to day, it does need some means of getting independent reports. They're not completely in the control of the city manager. And that's why I personally am comfortable with Bob Archer's plan that they would report back to the council on these things as an independent means of providing them additional performance-related information about the city manager's work. Now, the manager still ends up, as I remember, still ends up hiring in the same way as I've talked to Kevin Singer, the superintendent of Topeka Public Schools. I talked to him about this, and he said he thinks it would be great to have that kind of auditor that would report to the board attorney because the board's attorney works for the board.
Okay, why the 6-3 vote? Because Councilman Archer, you know, on the surface it appeared to make a lot of sense to me as well. You know, having this auditor report directly to our elected governing body, that was voted down 6-3.
Right.
Now, taking a look at the six votes, and frankly, I just had Jeff Breisner on the show at 8 o'clock this morning. We were talking about other issues. Didn't get into this one. I didn't think to ask the question. Why the 6 no votes?
Well,
Councilman Archer's proposal.
Well, I don't know.
I didn't watch the meeting that night. I don't know.
I was there, and I'm not going to do justice to Jeff and others' arguments but I give Jeff all the credit in the world for the fact that we're still not doing what we need to do in terms of council's a policy group. Stop trying to individually direct the operation of the city government. So anything that speaks to that in any way, Jeff starts from, you got to convince me, and Bob yet hasn't convinced him. Therefore, the no vote.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jim. I think it's important that they try to strengthen and make this form of government work, and that means you strengthen the role of the council as a policy-making body and the manager as the person responsible for carrying out that policy. And not have any diffusion by having other people involved who may or may not have the same goals as the council, as directed to the manager and as the manager. One of the things that happens if you have an auditor reporting to the council is that you've got somebody serving two masters. Now, any manager that has a performance auditor working for him is not going to say, don't tell them this. You can't do that. I mean, you can't say, don't tell them you found a problem. You have to say, lay it out there. Lay it out so we can fix it. Because with the council knowing that it needs to be fixed, they'll give me the resources to help me fix it. I can't fix it without their support, whatever it is. And you don't want, a manager wouldn't want the story to be edited in such a way that it didn't identify the problems. Because any performance auditor is going to find some problems in something that's working out there. The streets, we're not fixing all the streets we need to fix. As you can say, Jim.
Yes.
And we're not doing them the way a lot of people are doing in other things. And, you know, you could go through a whole lot of things. But I think it's important to have the auditor report to the manager.
Jim Ogle, John Arnold, they're my guest, and we're talking about the top stories of the week. If you have a question or a comment, jim.cates@cjonline.com. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we're back. Hey, the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall, folks. 5th and Harrison, three floors of antiques, collectibles, garage sale items, you name it. And you can probably find it at the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall. And also, folks, if you've got some items laying around the house, rather than waiting until spring for a garage sale, it's going to be a lot of hassle. Possibly you're not going to make that much money in the end result. Anyway, how about loading those items up in the trunk of the car, taking them to the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall, because they'll take your items on consignment. All you have to do from that point on is just wait for the mailman to come once a month and cash the check. It just takes all of the work away from you. You don't have to worry about advertising your garage sale. You don't have to worry about sitting in your garage all day long. Let the Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall do the work for you. 5th and Harrison, it's within walking distance of downtown Topeka. Check it out. They're open 7 days a week. They open around 11 o'clock each and every day. The Downtown Antique and Collectibles Mall. Jim Ogle, John Arnold are my guest, and we're talking about the top stories of the week. Next Friday, a week from tomorrow, we're going to be back on schedule. I'm leaving town tomorrow is the reason that we are hosting a special Thursday edition of the show. And by the way, a week from Friday, of course, Chad Harkness and Sarah Ely, the producers and the producer of 48 Hours, is going to be joining us by phone. Chad Harkness will be in studio, preceded by Bob Beatty. And we're going to be continuing our conversation about his trip to North Korea. And I know, John, you'll be coming in around 9 o'clock or so.
Yes.
A week from Friday. Okay. Let's get back to the top stories of the week. John Arnold, number one, numero uno in your book. The top story of the week was, or is?
Well, I think one of the interesting things, and it isn't a top story in the sense that it made big headlines or anything, but it's an interesting story in my mind about city government when they sat and they talked about putting together a study group, a citizens group, to take a look at this form of government to see what can be done to make it better and see how it's working.
Jeff Preisner, I had Jeff on the show, as a matter of fact, at 8 o'clock this morning to talk about that very topic.
Oh,
so,
did you?
Yeah, you bet.
Well, the interesting thing to me is they said, well, we're going to put this committee together in 2015. And I'm sitting there saying, what? Wait, 2015? What are we talking about, taking a look at it, at the former government in 6 years? Well, they said they want to give it a chance to work. Well, they haven't given it a chance to work the past 5 years. They haven't supported the council manager for former government. They haven't done what they need to do, as Jim and I were talking.
John, pull your mic in a little.
As we were talking about a little bit ago, the council still acts in the same way they acted under the old mayor council former government. And they still have staff, and they still do things with committees and do them just exactly the same way as he did before. Well, maybe that's an overstatement, but very close to the way they used to do them before. And they need to change that. They need to work
What exactly
hard.
Do they need to change? Do you think they're getting too involved in personnel matters?
Oh,
if you're looking at our city council overstepping their bounds, where are they overstepping?
It's not so much that they're overstepping, Jim, as it is they're not supporting the manager to be as strong as the manager needs to be. And that means...
Are you talking about our current city council?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I can see that under the previous city council.
I know we have three new council people, and they haven't had a chance to really show their stuff yet. But and they may change some things. But the fact that the council still has two or three staff people is counter to this form of government. The manager is supposed to be the council staff, and he's supposed to be the one that delivers to them everything that they need. And that's how you build trust. You have a working relationship that says, I trust that you will do what I want you to do, and you're doing it, and I'm glad. That's fine. We're working well together. When you have a separate staff, then that staff is not reporting to the manager, and manager may not be getting the information.
John, I want to interject an opinion here that will get Jim Ogle's opinion
sure.
on this, because I look at this new grouping of city council members. I think we're well on the road to recovery, if you will, you know, comparing this group to previous groups, because we had, well, frankly, Blackburn pretty much dominated the city council for 4 years, and we got into a very polarized situation with our city council to where it was going to be a pretty predictable 5-4 vote on most major issues. Before we had Blackburn, frankly, we had the same thing. It was just a different grouping of people to where we had predictable 5-4 votes. I look at this new grouping of city council members. The votes so far are unpredictable, you know, how they're going to align themselves. And I really think this group, they give the appearance of respecting each other, agreeing to disagree. And they just seem, this seems to be such a much, much better working arrangement, working group of people than we've had in years past.
I hope you're right. I hope that lasts.
Yeah, I guess my disappointment with city government, and I'm going to take this right back to possibly our city attorney, our city manager, and I'm going to beat the drum this one more time on the election that we had last April the 7th, to where the voters of the city of Topeka thought they were voting on giving our mayor a veto power, thought they were giving our city council the right to override the mayor. And that's not what happened at all. What we did April the 7th, we now have created a 10-member city council. That was not the intent of, I don't think, the voters when they went in and voted on this ordinance, basically to clean up the language on our current form of government. And that blame you can't put on our city council. That has to go right back to our city attorney and or city manager for coming up with this language that we had on the ballot that basically strip the mayor of his powers. And whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, I'm not sure that's the point of the conversation.
Well, I don't think...
Because it's what the voters were... What they thought they were voting on was something entirely different than the eventual outcome.
No one was intending to strip the mayor of his powers, but to normalize his powers, that he had the ability to veto acts, and then that veto could then be checked by a supermajority of 2/3 vote, then can override that veto.
Cleaning up the language.
And clean up that's
right. That's right.
Instead, we were reminded, oh, by the way, there's the Kansas law that allows you to exist, says that these are things by the government, and it supersedes anything you decided to do under your
charter. Jim Ogle, why wasn't this brought out before April the 7th? Because, you know, within 2 weeks after that election, somehow, some way, the city attorneys managed to have all of this information at their fingertips. Why weren't we advised? Did TV 13 editorialize on this in support of, we just need to clean up our language? That's all you're going to be voting on April the 7th is simply cleaning the language
up. It didn't seem, Jim, what was in play in that election was whether or not we raised the sales tax half a cent. And instead, what we found, and I just remember the look on number of the council members' faces and Bill Button's face when, you know, out pops this ruling. Well, actually, what we just approved is this. It's kind of, there, you know, that, what was the Shakespeare line, kill all the lawyers? There are times when you metaphorically feel tempted because it's like you feel like you're being played with a game. And, you know, in this case, I think we were. Clearly what was attempted to
be said. We absolutely were being played with because TV 13, this show, the Capital Journal, virtually every media outlet in this community was saying the same thing.
Oh, and by the way, you'll vote on whether or not the mayor no longer has absolute veto power.
There you go.
And that was how it was perceived, and when you read it that. But the underlying Kansas law supersedes that, and there are things that are defined for a governing body, and the governing body definition includes the mayor.
We should have been told that prior to
And so 7. Now you have that they don't do anything without the mayor looking over and saying, now is this one I vote on or not?
Yep.
You know? So we still don't know what it we have to apply. But I think it also sets up, yeah, this is one of the things I've learned in the 3.5 years here. You know, the person who really runs city government? City attorney. Because the city, once the city, they act like when the city attorney writes an opinion, that that came from the Pope. And, John, you've been involved, I mean, they then fall back. I thought attorneys worked for organizations and didn't have the force of law. But they treat it as if it has the force of law.
Attorneys in city government are just like attorneys every place else.
Yes.
And it's like, who was it? Some great industrialist said, I tell my attorney what I want to do, and then he tells me how I can do it.
Exactly.
And that's the way it ought to be. And really, that's this city attorney's office doesn't quite work that way. It's they're working more independently, in my judgment, than trying to help make the organization function well. And there are a lot of attorneys over there also. And yeah, it's one of the organizations within city government that could use some organizational development effort. Mm-hmm.
By the same token, I actually wish all the best to our city attorney because the day after I crashed, Jackie crashed. He was not wearing his helmet, and I was. And the difference there is that he has a fairly large crack in a vertebra. He came back to work; it widened, so they had to put him into complete immobilization.
Oh wow!
And he's going to be out for a while. So. That makes the real challenge now for him is to recover. But for our city during this time, we're once again in a situation when the other attorneys in the office are having to pick up the slack. And as we saw in a couple of the rulings between the previous attorney leaving and then Brandon issuing rulings, they flipped.
Yeah, yeah.
They went 180 degrees on some of this stuff. Nope, it doesn't mean that. And lawyers are not necessarily any better at defining what words are than editorial boards are. And I was hoping Rick would be here so we could argue about what in the world an improvement was that people voted on, because it was clear to me that when we voted for the half-cent sales tax, it did not mean we're going to build a road just as badly as they might have built it in the 50s and learn nothing more from what engineers have learned from design and everything to do things, because that's the editorial stance of the editorial board right now in reference to the Complete Streets movement.
Oh,
you can't do that. You can't look at anything. It's got to be exactly what it is to use the same thing. So that puts this city, if we follow what the editorial board says, it means that we should go about the kinds of practices in design and development that don't foster people to participate in the process, that have you digging up sections of Wanamaker the way they did with virtually no notice, and then be surprised when all the businesses have a fit and then you have to fill it back in because you don't have a workable plan.
Yeah.
The roundabout at 21st and Urish that you leave hanging, and look at the joy, the response from the neighborhood about having a roundabout dumped on them without any discussion. And as I understand, you know, the approach of the city engineers about that was we're the only ones that know how to design. Well, they're using They're doing what and they even freely admit, we're doing what we did, what we've always done. Well, are we happy with that? That's where I think that the editorial board is completely off base in evaluating what the citizens voted for. They not only voted to fix the streets, but clearly from the get-go, the wording said, and improvements. And if there's a better way to do it, we shouldn't do it the way the old way that was.
Yeah, the definition of a street is right-of-way to right-of-way.
Thank you.
And that includes sidewalks, curbs and gutters, and pavement for the streets. But it also can include bikeways, landscaping, everything that goes in that right-of-way.
Everything that is in the right-of-way.
And that's not going beyond what we've done in the past, and it's not some kind of eroding of the sales tax authorization. It is just saying, hey, look, we can do things a little differently. We don't have to do them like we did them in the 50s. And, you know, currently around the country, bikeways and bike lanes are an integral part of streets. And people ride on them, and they try to ride on them upright. For the most part, some of us try it differently.
Some of us try to do it face first, but nevertheless,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work, and that's why we need bike lanes to encourage me.
Sure.
We're fat. I clearly qualify under the obesity standard of the Centers for Disease Control. We are aggressively getting fatter in the state of Kansas and in the city of Topeka. Everything shows that. We need a built environment, our streets, our sidewalks and everything, that encourage people to be out and doing active things, not sitting and driving.
And alternative transportation is legitimate. Bike lanes and trails are alternative transportation routes. And those need to be encouraged. And it doesn't hurt a thing in the sales tax to include those in the streets in that right-of-way to right-of-way definition.
When we're talking about the Complete Streets program, this would increase the cost by what percent if we were to adopt what you're talking about, you know, as far as the bike paths, the whole nine yards?
Let's
talk money.
First of all, one of the important things to remember is that's too simplistic a question, because one of the things Complete Streets says is you look at how the road is used, what its traffic is, that section, how people might use it, and then you make a decision. It does not mean every street has a bike lane on it, because a whole lot of streets don't have the traffic that you need to have a bike lane in order to have the bike people feel safer about riding to the side and not riding on the right of someone's bumper.
I live on a cul-de-sac. I don't need a bike lane.
Absolutely. So it isn't a standard that says you put bike lanes everywhere.
Let's take 10th Street, for example. If we were to have bike lanes on 10th Street, that's going to increase the cost by what percent? Bike lane streets.
Let's go this way. Let's talk about 6th Street, because 10th Street is a disaster. 10th Street, for traffic volume reasons, needs to be expanded to 4 lanes.
Where are you talking? Where?
From Bobo's West, all the way.
Yes. Okay.
All the way to Fairlawn, and all the way out to Wanamaker.
Sure.
And with the new Kansas Discovery Center, that will have thousands of people coming to the park. That 2-lane country road that I happen to live off of is completely inadequate to handle traffic, let alone bikers, because it just drums it in. People can't even walk.
No, exactly right. I saw a woman pushing.
John, you're going to pull yours in just again.
Woman pushing a stroller along Wanamaker South about 35th Street, and she was in the street right away, no sidewalks, no curbs and gutters. Right along there, and I thought, that's imminently unsafe to be walking along there.
But to better answer your question, Jim, is that in most cases, you take a street like Southwest 6, we can turn that immediately into a complete street by doing a lane diet. We have lanes that are as wide as interstate highways. The problem is that in a corridor, that's not an interstate. People aren't supposed to drive at 70 miles an hour on that, and you don't need to provide the buffer. You can put bike lanes on each side of 6th Street.
Right.
It's a restriping.
It's all it
is. And you're
that's
done
a,
there.
The cost is stripe paint.
Right there. Now,
paint striping.
Mm-hmm. Now, on other streets, let's take Huntoon, for example. as it comes inbound. Huge wide street that's in bad physical condition. Very easy there, after you fix the physical condition, to put a bike lane on that going in the direction of the one-way traffic. On both sides, 12th included, come in the other direction. So bike lanes are necessary where arterial traffic is so high that people will feel and will be unsafe because they don't have a designated place the bikes are supposed to
be. But yet, Local John Arnold, this half-a-cent sales tax that we passed, this was money that's going to be spent over and above our normal appropriations for street repairs, correct?
And our normal appropriations for street repairs were virtually nothing, were completely inadequate.
Well, I mean, they would certainly take care of striping. There was enough money
absolutely
to stripe 6th Street, so is it really a problem? If we're talking about, you know, the arterial...
Here's why it's a problem.
Here's
why it's a problem, and this is why the CJ editorial board is doing a great disservice to this community. It is allowing the city planners and the engineers to steadfastly sit there and say, we know what's best. They didn't ever look at these issues. They've never supported these issues. They build things that, quite frankly, let's go through the list. Let's look at the Wanamaker building process. Let's look at how they dumped a roundabout on the people. The same things we were talking about. If you don't adopt a complete street policy and make it part of all this and tell them, and this is the whole thing about what we were talking about earlier with the council, sets policy and the manager's responsible for any of his employees do it. If we don't have that policy, they will design the same crap they've designed before.
It's related to
a communication challenge is what we have.
Related to that is that issue of the bikeways grant. And Mayor Button vetoed that application for the bikeways grant, saying our engineers can go ahead and design those bikeways the way they are. Problem is, as Jim says, they haven't been given the direction from the council that this is policy. We want bikeways designed in.
And they won't
do it on their own.
And
or they would have done it before now.
Exactly. And they will do it. They will do it, and we got it. We raised the money for the match for that, and actually, working with the state, got more money. It's even going to be a larger study for a larger countywide plan to make that happen.
Jim Ogle, John Arnold, they are in studio, the top stories of the week. That's the topic. Stay tuned. More to come.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100. Or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right.
Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back. Hey, coming up Monday on the show, of course, Tim Richer, he's coming in at 8 o'clock. We're going to be talking about the top city hall and courthouse stories. And Congresswoman, well, she's not a congresswoman, Congressman Todd T. Hart's wife, Vicki, is going to be joining us at 8:30 or so. We're going to be talking about the life of the candidate's wife out on the campaign trail. And at 9 o'clock, Dr. David Ross is coming in. We're going to have an Ask Your Physician half hour or so. And possibly we'll have somebody on at 9:30 talking about the smoking ordinance petition. And we'll see where that takes us. Jim Ogle, John Arnold, they are in studio. Let's continue our conversation about street construction, street repairs. Jim, going back to the challenge of, you know, complete streets, because one of the things you're trying to create, of course, bike pathways. And again, if it's a simple matter of striping, that money appears to be in our CIP budget. So,
but it's more than that. It is absolutely more than that. The city is responsible, for example, for all the transit stops. Have you ever ridden a city bus,
no.
Jim? Have you, John, had the opportunity on occasion?
Yep.
Most of our bus stops are absolutely ridiculous. They are the fall off into a ditch on the side of country roads. You can go up and down Southwest 6 and see that. You can see that on Southwest 10th. And like, the city's responsible for those. What Complete Streets says is, if you want people to use your transit system that you're already supporting, you want to make that money go work, you want to have even more people use it, you've got to get them, have an easy and safe place to get on and off the bus. And in most cases, we don't. For example, Complete Streets would say, as you design all this, you think about transit people getting on and off the bus.
Sure.
You know, our city engineers, we've got bridges we've built over the railroad tracks that have on them drains that run parallel to traffic. Guess what happens when a tire of a bike hits a drain that's parallel to traffic?
You get dumped.
You get dumped. You know, we don't think about those things. And what Complete Streets says is, as policy, you have to think of all the uses of the right-of-way, not only for the cars, but for the walkers, the riders, the people who have limitations based on mobility or age or disability or whatever. All those things have to be considered. And when you think of all those things, then, and how much traffic comes through there, you then make your design. You don't come out with a cookie cutter generic, this is how we lay down a block in the city of Topeka, which is how we've done it and why we have so many mistakes throughout this community.
And now we're retrofitting throughout the community all of the curb cuts so that you can wheelchair down nice little ramps in either direction on every single intersection in town. And it's caused by some law case that occurred some time back that says everybody needs to spend all their money on that particular thing. But you're right. We ought to have the bus access points being very well handled, and the sidewalks leading up to those need to be handled so kids can walk to schools. And, you know, incorporate some bike trails that are off the street, outside the curb and gutter.
And I'm fully supportive.
It's a legitimate transportation system.
I'm not advocating that brand new trails be paid for out of the sales tax. The word existing is part of that working. But improving existing streets by including, I think, is clearly appropriate. But what we're doing with the trail study is building a plan to input a larger network here, and then we make a policy decision. Are we going to pay for it?
All right, Jim Ogle, John Arnold, we've had the opinion, of course, expressed in the Capital Journal editorial page But what is the city of Topeka saying as far as their definition of what can and can't be done?
Well, there's an argument about that right now. And in the end, it's going to be up to the council to decide what that is, because defining each of the words.
The city is saying we want to incorporate some of the complete streets.
The engineers, as I sat in the meeting Monday, our public works director sat there and said, we will not look at any complete streets things because we've not identified where the money comes from. And I literally about blew a gasket, and after the meeting met and had a discussion with Mike and with Norton and everything, and Norton said, no, in every case we're going to take a look at what the complete streets cost. But the whole point is, it's this steadfast desire to, we are only going to look at design principles routed in the 50s. By God, we were right, because in many ways, for the engineers, complete streets is a challenge that you weren't doing what you should have been thinking about. And I will tell you, if you drive Wanamaker and 10th, take a look at what the sidewalk does. They put the button. Who needs to push the button to walk across the street? Particularly people who have disabilities, might be in a wheelchair and the like, and you see them out in this community. The button is 8 feet away from the sidewalk that they roll up for, and it's ground that they have to go over to get to the button because they put it on the pole. No one who ever even thinks about those things designed it that way, and they just did that recently. It's that kind of error throughout the entire community. I got a bus pass, and for the 3 months before I did this, I rode the city buses, and I put my bike on the buses to ride to see what people were facing, because
we all have a burn on certain aspects of street construction, street repair. I look at 29th Street between Wanamaker and Urish. It certainly needs to be widened to full length.
They're in the process.
And what they're doing right now, John Arnold, I know you go down that street as well.
You bet.
We're moving the power lines 8 inches. 8 inches moving the power lines so we can create a four-lane street. But the thing that irritates me,
they're also putting utilities.
Yeah.
Moving the utilities. Yeah.
Sure. 8 inches. But if we're talking about beautification of this community, if there was ever a time to start burying power lines, utility lines,
absolutely,
this is the time to do it. I don't understand for the life of me.
Because the Topeka Capital Journal's editorial board is telling people, no, you only pay to lay concrete down just the same way you ever did it before.
Well,
and if we follow the lead of this paper's editorial board, we're going to do all your worst nightmares that are going to make you want to spend 9 months out of the year somewhere else instead of 3 months.
Well, but this happened before the editorial board.
No,
met.
But it's that
21st in Urish, because again, we have overhead power lines. It would have been so easy at the time to bury those pipelines.
But we've got the money right now.
Of this community.
We have the money right now. We made a conscious choice as the voters in this community to spend money to repair and improve. And I would say to you, that's an improvement that street needs, that you're talking about.
Bingo.
But if I follow the lead of what's been written in three columns by Rick and one editorial, no way is any of that going to happen. You do the same thing you did 30 years ago, regardless of how the traffic is changed.
Yeah, you can't do that. The world has changed, and we have to be up to speed. It doesn't matter that nowadays people are riding bikes. We need to build that in. I mean, they weren't riding bikes 30 years ago when they built that street originally. When 29th was first built, which was probably 50 years ago or more than that.
Well, and it wasn't the 29th that's the middle of a city today.
Well, that's exactly right.
You know, the problem with so much of Southwest 10th to the west is it's still the country road.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a city grew up around it.
Yeah, that's true. There are a lot of cities like that, a lot of streets like that in town that need the improvements. And you see some of the improvements, like we saw at 21st and Urish, where they did the roundabout. And they did it in such a way that they didn't keep traffic access available to that new little shopping center. And a couple of businesses failed as a consequence. And the engineers have to think about those things ahead of time and design projects in such a way that businesses stay open. I was hired in one city because they were doing a downtown redevelopment project, and they had so badly paid attention to the local businesses that a lot of businesses were failing, and they got me in because I'd completed a downtown project without that happening. And we immediately changed the way we were doing business and how we designed it, how we did the project. You've got to keep businesses open, and our engineers, our designers have to think about that stuff and plan it accordingly. They'll say, well, it costs more money to do that. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Well, what money are we losing from sales taxes from businesses that fail?
You just cannot allow businesses to fail because you didn't figure it out.
We are out of time. John Arnold, what's coming up this weekend? How close are you to blogging?
Yeah, I've got to talk to Rick Anderson and get clued in on that, because I tried to do something and it didn't quite work, so I'll get that figured out with
you. Great. So this is going to be in the not-too-distant future.
Hope so.
Good, because I miss your columns.
Oh, thanks.
They were great, great columns. Coming up this weekend,
WIBW-TV. Remember that you can now get our second channel, our MyTV channel, for those of your cable subscribers, move from 99 to 11. In the city of Topeka, most of the area covered here. So encourage people. We do additional hours of our morning show on there every weekday morning. We do a 9 o'clock news at night and the like, and encourage people to watch that. And, of course, I would point again a week from now to the 48 hours at 9 o'clock a week from this Saturday with the Cisco Harkness murders.
I'm glad you mentioned that on Channel 11, because I noticed that and I said, where'd that come from? I didn't see anybody talking about that. Yeah.
When was this change implemented?
October 7th. It was on 99, and okay. 99 for a lot of the didn't work right on their boxes, and is part of those very public negotiations that for in some cases appeared to be only about money between us and Cox. One of the elements was the other, that they moved the channel.
Okay. Very good. Jim, we'll look forward to seeing you in 3 weeks, 3 weeks from Friday.
You got it.
And glad to see everything's going well with you, my friend. John Arnold, we will see you a week from tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And hopefully we'll see something in the way of blogging in the not-too-distant future. Looking forward to that. On deck, Dave Jackson. We're going to spend an hour talking about lawn and garden guidance. Stay tuned, folks. A lot more to come. I'm Jim Cates.
CJOnline.com has been upgraded, and it's an entirely new way for you to experience your community.
More than ever, CJOnline.com has what you need when you need it.
As your morning starts, CJOnline.com is updated with overnight news, weather, and the morning buzz.
Throughout the day, they bring you developing stories, interaction, and commentary.
In the evening, they recap the day in news and sports and feature their local bloggers.
Experience the local news and sports at CJOnline.com.
Your 24/7 Northeast Kansas news connection.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Canada Drug of Topeka provides a safe and easy way of delivering prescriptions to your door and saving you money every day.
Are your medication costs spiraling out of control? Is Plan D really saving you any money once you reach the donut hole? For many of us, saving money on skyrocketing medication costs has become a vital way of controlling those tight monthly budgets. I'm Eric with Canada Drug. We're locally owned and operated, have been for over 5 years, serving your friends and neighbors, helping them save thousands of dollars yearly on essential prescription medications. To find out how you can have more medication at the end of your month for less money, call us at Canada Drug today, 785-272-6100, or visit us just east of Wanamaker on 17th, between Applebee's and McDonald's.
Saving for everybody, we're Canada Drug.
Canada Drug of Topeka, 272-6100.
We're back with Jim Cates at CJOnline.com, your source for live internet news, opinion, interviews, and conversation in Topeka. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back with Dave Jackson. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
I'll tell you, this weather has just been god-awful. But how has this impacted your business?
Well, it's kept gardeners at home, that's for sure. More than you have been discouraged by the weather, I guess.
Oh, boy.
I don't, yeah. Hopefully the sun will break out this afternoon.
But I know, man, last week we talked, you know, that was the last weekend as far as overseeding your yard for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not going to be anybody coming into Jackson's this weekend to buy seed.
Well,
unless they're planning on hanging on to it until December.
That, or if they want to cover it with straw. If you put that insulation down, but that becomes kind of pricey, so I really don't suggest you do that if you're planning on planting half an acre or so, because that's a lot of straw.
But coming out this weekend to buy seed, so you'll be ready for December.
Mm-hmm.
But seed's got to keep.
Oh,
it's not going to
sure.
Spoil.
Right.
Yeah.
Just keep it in the dry somewhere where it's not going to get wet. But you could still do that. Or if you just have 1,000 square feet to plant. We had a customer in this morning. They called me up. And you really wanted to get it done. 1,000 square feet is going to take, if it's a bare area, going to take about 6 or 7 pounds. So you're looking at about $14. And then it would take 2 bales of straw, which is roughly $12, $11 or $12, if you're going to plant that and cover it. You can still do that. Small areas you could do. Actually, also, I'm going to try my own front yard this weekend or later today to see exactly how the stuff planted on the 15th of October works. I'm going to test it in my own yard today. Make sure that we've been telling people correctly. So,
well, for those that are coming in possibly this weekend to buy the seed, mm-hmm. and they're looking at overseeding in the dead of winter, mm-hmm. because that's going to be the next seeding period, should you wait for snow on the ground? Should you overseed in December, January, when it's drier than a bone, before a snow, after a snow, during a snow? When should you put the seed down? The best time?
My preference is, of course, if you were going to do it, is put it down right ahead of a rain or a snow in the area. A lot of old farmers used to plant it on top of the last snow of the season, typically in February or something, and let that melt down in as well. Both work. It's a little less pleasant, I'm thinking, to go out there and walk on top of a snow cover and throw grass seed down than it is to do it right ahead of the grass seed. I mean, right ahead of the snow to put the seed down. That'd be my thought.
Okay.
But both works.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other, mm-hmm. whatever your personal preference is.
Right. If you want to go out there tramping in the snow, throw your seed down, that's great.
Now, for winter overseeding, when does that season end?
Well, that will end any time before March 20th, basically. You're going to
March the 20th, that's the cutoff, and then we're getting into, we've got a month
right.
off, and
right.
then we get into spring.
Spring seeding, right.
Spring seeding, mm-hmm. okay. So any time between December the 1st and March the 20th?
Mm-hmm. That'd be what's called dormant spring. You really can't by date cut that off. It may be warm next spring, and you might want to begin your spring seeding right away March the 20th or even March the 15th. But because the seed the soil temperatures and the air temperatures may be warm enough that the seed will germinate beginning March 15th next year. You never know with Kansas. However, the risk always is that we'll get like we did, what is it, 2-3 years ago now, we got that terrible, terrible cold in April, mid-April, right before Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And that has the capacity to freeze newly germinated seed, or did. And because your seed was up and little, just coming up, and then we had 3 days of temperatures down in the teens, which was really pretty nasty.
Yes, indeed. That it was.
You never know about Kansas.
Now, is now the weekend that we ought to be looking at fertilization as far as broadleaf weed killer? Are we getting into that 30-day period?
We could do that. Absolutely. Absolutely. If you've got broadleaf weeds out there now, and by broadleaf we mean anything
clover.
That's not grass. Yeah, clover, dandelions. If you have henbit or chickweed starting to germinate, which are that beautiful purple flower that's in your yard in the spring in March, then it's really going to be, we have a product that will work in this cold weather that will kill those broadleaf weeds. And we have it.
To make sure that they don't come up next spring.
Right. Well, it'll kill them now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the weed-free zone. That's the one that works in the cool.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about that since it got warmed up this year. It's a little more expensive because mm-hmm. it does work with the very well in the cool temperatures. And we have it both in a liquid or granular, however you want to put it down. Mm-hmm. So it's the stuff to go about using.
Okay. And that's part fertilizer, part broadleaf weed killer.
Well, we can go that way, too, if you want to fertilize and kill weeds. We can go that way. We have it. If you don't want to fertilize, if you want to wait and put on your winterizer in okay. November, you can do that as well. We have all the options in the world. We just kind of need to talk about what you've already done and what you plan to do as to how we're going to attack the broadleaf weeds if they're a problem. And that also goes back to whether you've seeded and when you seeded and how much that seed's coming up. We have to watch that, too.
I don't want it to be a problem next spring. I want to have this out of the way. Next spring, I don't want clover. I don't want chickweed. I don't want any henbit.
Mm-hmm.
I just want a nice-looking lawn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And now's the time to take care of that.
You could, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure okay. could. With the weed-free zone, for you, probably the easiest, quickest, cheapest way to do weed-free zone in your yard would be with a hose and sprayer, or we have it in... If your hose reaches to the whole yard, all you have to do is go out there and spray it.
Mm-hmm.
Just walk back and forth and spray the yard like you've seen the guys with the True Green truck, only this time you're using a product that really works. But anyway, that would be the way you would handle broadleaf weeds for your yard.
Yeah, because we've got close to an acre and a half, so we've got a big yard.
Really?
And you would suggest that as opposed to granular. Yeah.
The liquid's cheaper if you can reach it with a hose.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It would cost you less money.
Very good.
So anyway.
Jim.Cates@cjonline.com. Dave Jackson. Jackson's Greenhouse and Garden Center is here today, a day early, because we're taking tomorrow off, and we'll be back on schedule a week from Friday with your regular show.
Right.
But we will be taking tomorrow off. And we need to take a break. Let's take an early break, and we'll be back. Stay tuned, folks.
Jackson's Greenhouse, your plant shopping center. Let Jackson put a big smile on your home. Landscape planning and design, we listen and we take the time. We're professionals and we're out to make it known. We're your plant shopping center all the way. Jackson's Greenhouse has what you need today. Residential or commercial, we're at your service. Landscape to lawn supplies that you like best. From roses, flowers, shrubs, and trees to everything your garden needs, Jackson says just come in, be our guest. Jackson's Greenhouse, your lawn and garden place. We're your plant shopping center all the way. At Jackson's Greenhouse, we're out to make your day.
Hi, I'm Richard Roundtree. I'm a breast cancer survivor. Yes, you heard me right. Men get breast cancer too, and men need just as much help understanding what their doctors tell them as women do. But where do you go to get that kind of help? Go to breastcancer.org, a special place on the internet that helps you understand the kind of cancer you have, your treatment options, and all the big words your doctor uses. Breastcancer.org is the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Risa with Lauer Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We are not just your heating and air conditioning experts. We also can take care of any of your plumbing needs, including sewers and backflow preventers. So call us now at 357-5123.
Welcome back to Jim Cates at CJOnline.com. Our phone lines are now open at 295-1150 or email Jim at jim.cates@cjonline.com. Here's Jim.
Okay, we are back. And again, jim.cates at cjonline.com. We were just talking about repaving our streets in Topeka. And within 10 years, 50% of the streets are going to be completely repaved. Pretty ambitious.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, look at the life cycle of those. Don't you think it's about time? Crying out loud.
Well, it is. It is. But 50%, I was impressed with that figure.
Were you?
Yeah.
I'm totally not.
Really?
Well, really, because the township, your township and my township, goes through and repaves those streets every 5 years.
Yeah.
They're on a 4 or 5 year program in the township for less taxes, less money.
Well, I like that.
Yeah.
So
what?
And Soldier Township, you're repaving every 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, we have a
resurfacing, I should say.
Yes, resurfacing every 4 years is we have a four. We've set it up in quadrants, and
really?
We just rotate around. So that the street crew is always working in one area. It's more efficient, and of course that's the way it's done. If the price of asphalt or something goes up way beyond what we can afford, then we can stretch it to 5 years without having all these potholes and all this other kind of stuff. Your streets remain sealed so that you don't have freezing and thawing and going the liquid going down into the street and blow into the surface where your base is destroyed. So that, I mean, and like I said, your township does it, Soldier Township does it for sure.
Interesting.
Those are the two townships.
I didn't realize, you know, we were repaving and resurfacing
well,
at
that's,
that rate.
Yeah.
In Mission Township, I guess Mission would be the same as Soldier, or close to it, I would think.
Right. Except Soldier's larger. We have more street, more miles. We have 120 miles. Not that I'm still on the board, but that's how we set it up while I was on there.
You've got more surface miles of roads than Mission Township? Really?
That's because the township's larger. Soldier Township is not one of the squares that was set up in the original where you had, what is it, 8 or 12 by 12, 8 to 8. Kansas was a...
I don't know. How big townships are, frankly.
Oh.
Mission, I know.
That's
runs.
Right. You didn't take Kansas history in sixth grade. So
no, I did. No,
you're
I did.
You're from that. But townships are statutorily were set up in squares, so many square miles per township, and one square mile was set off for education purposes in each township. But Soldier Township was different because in the early days there was a county between Shawnee and Jackson County.
There was what?
There was a county between Shawnee and Jackson, and it was Calhoun County.
Really?
North of the river, and up so far was Calhoun County, and in the then that was all changed in the 1860s or something. I can't even remember what. I need to get more detail on that, but... But
so basically, but the old Calhoun County became Mission Township.
No, became Soldier Township.
Soldier Township.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And so Soldier Township is roughly three times the area of any other township in terms of geographical miles. That's why we have more roads.
Hmm. So most of your townships are resurfacing every 4 and 5 years.
No, just the townships like Mission and Soldier that have some population and some tax base.
Yeah.
Most of the townships have in the system in the state have turned their road maintenance over to the respective county, and most of the townships in Shawnee County have done that as well, because they don't have yet the tax base to do what Mission and Soldier have done.
Yeah, I guess I just haven't paid that much attention to what's going on in Mission Township, other than the fact that our streets are in a good state of repair.
Yeah, they've done a good job.
You know, we just haven't thought through planning in this community very, very much. I look at all of the resurfacing that's going to occur over the next 10 years.
In Topeka.
29th Street, yeah, is going to be widened from Wanamaker to Urish, which God knows it needs to be.
Should have been done years ago.
We're moving the power lines back 8 inches. 8 inches.
What?
Yeah.
8 inches?
Yeah, so we can create this four-lane road. But whatever we're doing in terms of power lines, we keep talking about beautification of Topeka. We're still going to have these god-awful power lines above ground after paying for, you know, turning a two-lane road into a four-lane road. If there was ever a time to bury the power lines, to to really beautify this community, it would be now.
Is the,
you know, when you're coming in and looking at major.
Why don't you have Mr. Moore in and talk to him about that?
Well, I need to.
The Westar guy. Maybe there must be a technological reason.
Well, initially, it cost more to bury a pipeline or a power line than it does to have the traditional overhead power line. Mm-hmm. But over a period of 10 years, the maintenance of that overhead power line, you know, within a 10-year period, it's much more inexpensive to have the underground power line as opposed to the overhead power line. If you're projecting it out over a 10-year period,
okay.
There's no maintenance. You know, once you've got the thing buried, there's no maintenance from that point
forward. Unless
somebody
cuts it, right.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe that's the answer. But
yeah.
So let's make that call to Westar and get him on and see what the deal is.
Well, and again, if we had underground power lines, we wouldn't have the right tree service all over this community,
mm-hmm,
you know, shredding trees.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I would like to see, you know, our traditional, you know, garden centers. When somebody comes in and wants to buy a tree, just ask that simple question. Have you looked up?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a power line above you? If so, don't plant a tree.
True.
And,
and we used to, Westar used to provide us the brochure to do that. But in the last, since Mr. Wittig came on board, we've never received any, and it hadn't been taken up since Mr. Wittig's been gone, is for us to hand out those brochures that show what varieties of trees go below which lines, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, such a shame, because I know so many people have complained about Wright Tree Service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it looked like Fairlawn from mm-hmm. 17th to 21st.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a tornado had rolled through there.
Sure did. One-sided trees.
Yeah, but again, you had people that were planting trees under power lines.
Right.
And there's only going to be one conclusion to that. You're going to end up with an ugly one-sided tree.
Well, that's true. But Fairlawn was one of the streets that was widened to four-lane about 40 or 50 years ago. So it's possible that those people had those trees planted, and then the power lines got moved back. I don't know. That's a possibility.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. So. Yeah. But again,
speaking of trees, this is the time to do your tree and shrub food.
Yes, it
the
is.
The Fertilome in Annette's tip, of course. Now that the temperatures are gone down, the trees are turning the color. They're not growing anymore. They're storing their reserves now. Now's the time to feed your trees, your shrubs, if they need it. And with the Fertilome, we recommend the Fertilome tree and shrub food because it is a slow-release granule that will actually get to the root system of the tree and be available to the root system throughout the winter and then make it that much stronger next spring.
So, okay. Now, how do you get that in the ground?
It's just a granule. You just sprinkle it out under the surface, under the area of the canopy of the tree to the drip line, they call it, where the leaves drip.
You go all the way out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Of course, on the bag it tells you how many pounds for how big or tall your tree is, how many pounds would go under each tree. So it's fairly simple, straightforward kind of a time. Trees respond really well. They don't absolutely have to have fertilizer, but a healthy tree is more insect resistant, more disease resistant.